Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
Circle in a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning, on an ever spinning reel, like a snowball down a mountain or a carnival balloon, like a carousel that's turning, running rings around the moon, like a clock whose hands are sweeping past the minutes of its face.
Abrupt. Welcome to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I am your host with Russ Avison.
Hello, Jimmy.
Hello, Rob. Some of the echo going here.
No, I got to tell you, I'm all of a sudden getting a lot of echo.
Me too. I've got a lot. Oh, no, it's gone now.
Okay, good. I thought the aliens were coming. Oh, we'll save that for later.
It could be. We are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Of course, I am live from my hovel in Star, Idaho. And Russ is, I think you're in Thousand Oaks tonight, aren't you, Russ?
Actually, I am at the Camarillo Public Library in Camarillo, California.
Oh, that's right, the library.
Yeah, I'm in study room E.
Gotta be nice.
I have to tell you though, I just finished teaching a class, and one of my students, Erin, she has a cookie business, and she brought me six beautiful and delicious shortbread sugar cookies.
Oh!
So they're sitting here with me, and I'm ready to rock and roll. They won't let me have any alcohol, so I can't sit and have any wine or anything.
Did she bring you a nice glass of Crown Royal? But apparently not.
No. Won't allow it.
That's the beauteous part of having your own home studio.
Okay, rub it in.
I'm like 12 feet from the kitchen.
You know,
I can
let's,
make
move on, let's move on.
Well, you know what? Let's get into tonight's guest because she's quite an interesting young lady. Christina Rienzi is her name. She's a Jersey Shore-based new adult thriller author. She is certified professional coach and the former president of Sisters in Crime Central Jersey, an INFJ who dreams big. Christina encourages others and herself to embrace the unknown through her stories. When she's not writing or drinking wine, oh, my kind of woman, Christina is spoiling her baby girl and two fur babies, which I'm going to assume bark when they want to, dissecting true crime stories, singing and dancing to yacht rock radio, another thing that I absolutely love, yacht radio. Rooting for the WVU Mountaineers. I have no idea what that is, but I'm sure she'll tell us. She believes in all things paranormal. Another thing we have in common. A closet full of designer bags, weekly manicures, the laws of attraction, aliens, angels, and the value of a graduate degree in psychology. Connect with Christina at ChristinaRienzi.com. And right now, please welcome to the Writer's Block, Miss Christina Rienzi. Yay.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Christina. Wait.
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
Thanks for the clap.
I love it.
So, talk to me about WVU Mountaineers. What is that? West Virginia University Mountaineers, I assume that's your football team?
Yes, West Virginia Mountaineers. That's where I went to undergraduate school in Little Morgantown, West Virginia, about 45 minutes south of Pittsburgh. Really rural and just awesome. Awesome sports, football team, great psychology program. And just, it was actually the number one party school when I went there. So, I mean, not saying that's why I went there, but I went there and had a great time. And just, it just has a great fan base. So I keep rooting for those Mountaineers.
Okay, well, it's not as big a party school, I'm sure, than Arizona State.
Oh, no. Well, you know, it was close back when I went, which was a million years ago. It's still pretty big, but we're known for burning couches and having mud pit fights, and it's a little wild there. But,
That's
I was
on
straight and narrow. Right?
I know.
It's like a Friday night. No, it was great. And it's actually a great contrast to New Jersey. So I feel like it was, I got a little bit of everything going to school there.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. You sent us over a book. And you did. I know you did, because I was sitting here looking at it. It's called Among Us.
Yeah.
And it's not a real long book. It's only about 260 pages. But it's a kind of a thriller slash kind of sci-fi slash almost spy novel. But it's an interesting story. And now the big question is, where did it come from?
Yeah, exactly.
Where did the idea come from?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm
a true
big.
Story.
Well, I believe it's a true story. It's my experience growing up. It's an autobiography. No, I'm obsessed with the what could be and what if and all that. And I watch a lot of the TV shows like the Unsealed Alien Files and all those crazy, conspiracy theory shows. And I just thought, what if it was true? What if this really could happen, and what would that look like? And what if it happened to somebody, and not that Marcy's anything like me, but what if it happened to somebody, some normal girl on the East Coast, just trying to, live her life. And, she gets mixed up in something a lot bigger than herself. And what would that look like? So that's really where it came from. And I'm part of it. What I loved doing, when I was writing the book, was really doing some research on different things out there already, like the Freedom of Information Act, and documents that had been released from years ago. I read them. I studied them. They were a little scary. Again, you don't know what's real and what isn't real. But a lot of the stuff that I made up, wink, wink, and some is fiction based on fact, and some is just purely made up. I did go out there and pull pieces of what was already out there in terms of government documents, and then I, obviously extrapolated, the things I thought were interesting and mixed them up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But, it was a little bit of me being afraid of what could really be and just taking it to that level. I try to write about things that scare me.
Uh-huh. Now, you haven't written so far a series of anything. Is this the first one in a series of books, or is this going to be a standalone?
So, what's funny? I have two books that go together. They're they're kind of a series. I was going to write more. I just kind of got distracted, as authors do with new story ideas.
Uh-huh.
But with Among Us, it's something that's dawned on me that I might want to write more. And just the way I ended the book, I felt like it left an opening for the book to go on, the story
right.
to go on.
Right.
So it is on my mind. Of course, like I said, as an author, we get distracted and have a million ideas, and I'm writing five things at once. But I would love to go back and revisit Marcy and where she ends up at the end of the book and what goes on from there.
Well, the reason I ask is because you did leave it open at the end of the book.
Yes. Yeah. So that's how I feel. I felt I did it on purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. And you slowed down dramatically, the last chapter. It slowed down dramatically from the pace set earlier in the book, and then it kind of tapered off real quick. But I assume that, being an idiot, I assumed, of course I know what assume means, that this was going to be number one in a series of possibly two or three books.
Yeah, and so when I wrote it, that's what I had in mind. I had in mind that, not to give away the ending, but I had in mind as to where she would go from there,
okay.
Just having more situations arise, I'll say it like that.
Christina, can you, for the people who haven't read it yet, could you just give us a little thumbnail sketch of the story without, again, giving away too much, because there's a lot of plot twists in this.
Oh, yes, there is.
Sure, yeah. So it's about a local Jersey Shore girl, because that's where I'm from, so I write about the Jersey Shore, English professor who is kind of, a conservative, very straight-laced, an English professor by day, who at night she writes kind of that taboo alien blog that, she doesn't she doesn't want her university to find out about. But she gets mixed up in a deadly government conspiracy plot. And it just takes her down a road she doesn't expect. And it kind of forces her to really make some decisions about who she is and who she wants to be. And kind of like every character, you want to grow and change. But it sort of puts her in some really uncomfortable situations. And it's funny you say about the plot twists, because all of those were sort of unplanned. They kind of came to me through the writing process, which I found interesting, because I'm a plotter. But I allowed myself to pants a little bit during this, which for the writers out there, you guys know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
That was definitely part of it, was just kind of figuring out how, where it was going to go, and letting the character speak to me and the story speak to me.
That was going to be go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just want to find out, you said that you did some mix of some, you know, fiction based on fact, and you did research with some government documents. Do you really think, and I'm not questioning this from a skeptic's viewpoint at all, but do you really think that some of this stuff is being kept from us, and that there's more than meets the eye to the general public?
Yeah, I do. I don't know what that is. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. I can, you know, come up with these grand ideas of that. I think, you know, all this stuff really is true and exists. I don't know. I'm not sure. I know that, a long time ago, and you know, back when you know, we had our first sightings, you know, sightings of different, you know, things that people said, oh, they're government, you know, it was a government UFO, wasn't an alien ship, it was a government plane or whatever. I know that in the beginning, people were communicating, and they were communicating about this, and it was happening in the paper, and it was happening, you know, in all kinds of media. And then at some point, it stopped. And when it stopped, it almost became taboo to talk about. So I feel like there's a reason it stopped, and I don't know what that reason is. And that's kind of what I wanted to explore in this book. But I do. I think that there's a lot that we don't know. And I think the premise of the book, what I was trying to get at with what I was questioning, was should we know, or should we not know? And what does that look like if we know? Do I want to know? I mean, do I really want to know? You know, that's kind of where I wanted to go with this, because I don't think we know everything. And I don't know what that means. And that's what scares me the most, is like, do I really want to know? Even though I'm saying in the book, she wants everybody to know, and the agency's saying no one can know. And there's a reason for each of those. And I wanted to explore those. Like, how would I feel if I worked for the government? I didn't want people to know something. Why don't I want them to know it? Is it for their own protection? What is it? What's the reason? There has to be a reason. So that was sort of where I went with this, exploring, do we really want to know?
Uh-huh. Well, you live on the shore, and Jersey Shore is famous for UFO sightings.
Right,
and housewives.
It actually is. It really, and housewives, yeah, and the Jersey Shore show, which, by the way, nowhere near. Well, actually, I would say about a half hour from where I live. Nowhere like where I live, by the way.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it is. Not at all. Not at all. I mean, it is. That is real, but not where I am. Yeah, you know, there really are, and it's funny. I'm always getting, because I have a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people here, obviously, who believe and know that I'm like interested, and so I'll get a lot of people that'll, you know, send me stuff, and I just I look into it, you know, like who saw what, and there was a report of this, but also you have to remember, there's a lot of government, like I live right by a fort, an abandoned fort. So there's a lot of government stuff going on where I am too. So, you know, and they do a lot of drills. Like we'll actually get phone messages on our voicemail at home saying, you know, don't, you know, be alarmed, or we're doing military drills. So there's always stuff happening over here. So the sightings, yeah, I mean, am I saying they're not, you know, I don't know what they are. They're unidentified, right? But maybe they're not. Maybe they're military. You know, I think there's a mix of both of those things going on. And also with the book, like I talk about the fact that I believe that, you know, not just the government, the military, like they know things, whatever those things are, that we might not necessarily know or be privy to. And so whatever it is they're doing, you know, I believe that there's a reason. I don't, you know, I don't know what that reason is, but I believe there's a reason why all of this is happening. But yeah, sure, certainly over the ocean, which is another piece I think about a lot. Like there's a lot of sightings, I know, in more in the West Coast, of things coming in and out of the ocean and things that aren't explainable. They're called, I think it's like, I can't think of the name of it, but instead of a UFO, it's like a submerged, unidentified object,
Well, part of the reason is because we have a lot more drugs on the West Coast.
Yeah, you think? That could be true. They're seeing things go in and not come out, or come out and not go in.
Well, that's also true. And then they try to put it through the desalinization machines, and it clogs everything up.
So. Yeah, sure. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Well, Christina, you brought up a really interesting point, because you said that there was a lot of sightings. People were communicating. They would talk on the phone. You would see things in the paper. There would be some photographs, and then it came to a stop. And I'm wondering if it has to do with social media, because when there's an uprising in some country, people are trying to get out, the government's maybe coming down on the people, you hear about this through Twitter immediately. And a lot of times when the reporters can't get in to get any stories, Twitter is what feeds the news. And that's where we see everything. Yeah. And I don't see anything on Twitter ever about sightings. Now, I'm not specifically following anybody that does this, but I'm wondering if really none of this does exist, and that's why you don't see it anymore, because now, you know, I don't know. I mean, it was just a thought.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. And I'm one of those people that believes anything is possible. So I'm not like, you know, I don't go down the road of saying like, this is the way it is, and that's, I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, and even if I had proof, I don't know what if I believe my own eyes. So to me, I think that's possible too. I think maybe, you know, it strikes me as odd. A couple of things that kind of scared me a little bit and struck me as odd were just going through, like if you do, you know, just any kind of Google search and look up, you know, there's, I think, one document and I have it referenced. I don't know if I referenced it in my book, but it's one of the main documents that they used that they came out in the Freedom of Information Act. I think it's called, well, Magic 12 was the group, and it's like Psalm, and I want to say it's like Psalm 100. I can't think of the number right now off the top of my head, but anyway, it's SOM, and it's it was a manual, and it was basically put out by the government, and it was all about how to react if you were to interact with an extraterrestrial you know, entity or spaceship. And they actually had, they defined like what an extraterrestrial, like it was an extraterrestrial being, and how you would, you know, how all the different kinds that there were and how you would need to interact with them. And there was a lot of detail, and it's all not coming to me now because I have mommy brain. I think I used to say I had Prego brain. Now I have mommy brain. So either way, my brain is like, it's very, very slow.
You women always come up with
this. My husband looks at me and goes, what happened to you? Because I was like, always sharp as a nail. So going through all of it, I think there's stuff out there that when you read it, you're like, did somebody write this and make this up? Is this a fake document? Because I don't know, maybe it's a fake document. But if it isn't, that's what's terrifying. It's like, why, you know, who put this in writing? Why would you put this in writing? And then why would you say it doesn't exist and it's out there now? And so those are the kinds of things that I was more questioning, like, where did these documents come from? Are they really government documents? They're stamped classified. They're, you know, they were released. Many of them were released with the Freedom of Information Act. So why would they put that out there if it wasn't a real government document?
Right.
How do they explain it? But no one talks about it.
Well, no,
I'll talk about it. So.
And now I'm going to cut you off for just a second. And Ronan, we're gonna hear a little bit of words for All Dogs Rule. You know, if you're in the Ventura area and you're planning a trip and remember there's no way you can take your canine buddy, how about considering All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover? That's right. All Dogs Rule Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Located on the beautiful Sespe River, if you want a place where you know your buddy will be safe and have lots of attention, being able to play with other dogs, goats, sheep, horses, and even more humans, then All Dogs Rule is the place for you. There's acres of play space, lots of grass, and bountiful orange trees, all with no stress, and a nice list of extras available if you'd want, just ask. So when your dog returns home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better. Check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call, 805-524-1100. Your dog will thank you.
A
And that's specifically for Mr. Russ Avison and his business out there in Fillmore, California. All dogs rule.
That was interesting music in that.
Oh, that's, you know what that's from?
Something, some Indian, something.
Last of the Mohicans.
There we go. Last
that's
of the
called
Mohicans.
The Gael. It's like 600 years old.
Ah. Oh, so I should remember that.
You should. Anyway, we're back live with our guest, Christina Rienzi, and we're talking about extraterrestrials in New Jersey and who believes in them, who doesn't, and how they fit into her novel Among Us. And Christina, if you want to call and talk to Christina, the number in the studio here is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Okay. Now, back to your extraterrestrials.
I was kind of thinking about, by the way, Jim, is the there was a television show back in maybe the early 70s, late 60s. It was called The Invaders.
Oh, yes. Roy Thinnes was in it.
Right. And I chat about this many times just because a good buddy of mine is friends with Roy Thinnes. But that show was kind of the same idea, is that Among Us, the invaders were living among us.
Right.
And
yeah.
Except there in that particular case, the government was trying to weed them out.
I think they're doing that now. I think they know they're here. I think the government holds crap over our head like a sledgehammer.
Right.
You know, so, they don't want us to know, but if we find out, they're going to hit us with the hammer.
Right.
Oh, yes, of course. You know, so, Christina, what did you find? What did you find in your research? Like, did you see anything like about Area 51, for example, or 54, whatever it is? 51, I think, is the where they, you know, yeah, I think of back in the 50s, where a balloon supposedly came down somewhere, but
that was Roswell.
Was that Roswell?
Roswell, 1947, yeah. Roswell, New Mexico.
Okay,
in the middle of a ranch.
Oh. All right. So, yeah. did you discover any information that kind of set you thinking, this could actually be?
Yeah, you know. So the two things that always jumped out at me, and these are also things you can learn from just watching. I mean, you know, if you watch Unsealed Alien Files, not that it's like, you know, it's a television show, but still, Project Blue Book, which is now a TV series, but the Project Blue Book documents out there. And I looked it up and read it, and it was, again, one of those things that kind of, it gets your mind going, like, is this real? And if it is, what does it mean? The other one was the Dolce Base, which kind of was where I got the idea that they're here, and, you know, that for the book, like, they would be here, and we'd know about them, and we'd be working with them. And you know, just the idea of what does that look like? Is that real? Because some of it is so far out. Like, if you really think about it, it's so, like, really, is this what we're talking about here? Like, you just want to, I almost want to, like, laugh at myself and go, like, there's no way. But when you start to really look at, like, the collective history of this, and then you start to think, like, could it be? And is there a reason, like we were saying, they stopped communication? It was in the paper, you know, that there was I don't know what they call it. I think they called it like a flying disc back then. It was like a fly, you know, that had crashed. And then the next time you looked, it was taken out of the paper and it was shut down. It was like, we can't talk about that. And then there was like another document that was revealed and it was shut down. And everything was kind of revealed too quickly and then pulled back and shut down. And people who really had access to any information were people in the government or military, which I understand. And quite honestly, in writing this book, I thought about that. I thought about security. I thought about like national, global security. What might that look like? If I was in charge of a country, if I was in charge of a planet, how would I want people to be informed about this stuff? Like, I don't want mass hysteria. I don't want people to be scared, but is there something to be scared of? Like, how would you communicate that? So I think if something is here and something is going on, and when you look at like the Dolce base, which is supposed to be like all of these levels underground, I think it's in Arizona, and Project Blue Book, where it's literally a study they did, and they gave you, you know, it was backed by science apparently, and if it is real, and they talked and they analyzed the different species and where they came from and all this stuff. And so if all of that is true and real, you know, how might that affect our society? How are we going to treat each other? What's going to happen? I mean, seriously, at the Jersey Shore, when the power goes out, it is like, you can't even imagine how people go crazy. Like, we had Superstorm Sandy. We lost power. We had no gas. Like, people were trapped. It was like there was mayhem everywhere. And I live in suburbia. So if you think about that, and then you think about, like, what might happen if people found out what was, you know, that this was real, it's scary. Like, it's terrifying. So I could see, like, you know, if there's any truth to it, why it might not, we might not want to talk about it so much.
I think the other part to think about, too, is that the majority of our culture is based a lot with religion. And if aliens came, that would dispel a lot of the preconceived notions everybody has about religion, because we were supposedly created. So then you're going to have mass hysteria because nobody's going to believe in God anymore. And
right.
It could be really bad. And I think in some ways the government likes us to all believe in God because it keeps us sane. Supposedly.
Well, you know, I just had a vision of aliens coming down and standing in middle of St. Peter's Square in Rome.
Yeah, sure.
The Basilica, and saying, "Hey, we dropped Jesus here off 2,000 years ago. What do you think of him?"
Right. Could you imagine?
The Catholics would go insane.
Hysteria. You know, talk about mass hysteria. I know. And it's, you know what, I think, and I'm just going to say this because I feel like, you know, if that, like, and like you could see that happening, but I think if there was some way, and I feel like, and I could be wrong, that the most recent Pope has like acknowledged that this is a possibility. I feel like this was out there, like it could have been a tweet. It could have been a bad tweet, but it was out there. But I think if that's the case, and we still need, we have the religion still in place, I think people will, it would become part of the doctrine. There would be an explanation for it. There would be, you know, a reason behind it. And I think people are going to believe what they want to believe. And there are going to be people who, if they saw an alien sitting in front of them, wouldn't believe that's what they were seeing. Like I said, I don't know that I would believe it. It's like so unbelievable in reality. And all the things that I was writing about, as fun as they were and terrifying for me, the thought that if it was real, like, I don't know that I'd be so brave as I am right now talking about it. Like, it's scary to me. It's also scary how, you know, people who do get involved in this and really, you know, come out with stories. Oh, I worked at Area 51 and here's what I saw. It's like they go missing. They disappear. That's part of the book too. Because that stuff does happen. You know, they come out and they speak up and they're gone. Well, where did they go? What happened to them? Like, that kind of, you know, that scares me too, because I feel like, well, there's a reason they're being, maybe they're, are they being silenced? Was it an accident? Is there a reason? And again, do I agree with it? Do I think that there's a reason we don't know? Because like we were saying, it's to keep everybody safe. It's to keep everybody, you know, able to live their life without living in fear every day. And I get that there's a value to that. I also get there's a value to the truth. So I was kind of in this book, as much as it is fiction, I was trying to explore, like, what does that look like when, you know, there are people who really believe I need to know everything that there is to know, and other people who know it all and are like, you really don't want to know, and it's for the greater good that you don't know. What's right or wrong? I don't know that there is a right or wrong. I think there's a balance.
Well, you know, yeah, on a much smaller scale, too, look at when Snowden released all of those documents from the government, the NSA documents, and the government feels they're justified in a lot of what they do in keeping it quiet because it's for the betterment of the country. And all of a sudden, all this stuff comes out that's being kept from us, and then people are up in arms about it. So on a smaller scale, it's the same thing.
Oh, sure. It's like you have a right to know, but what happens when you know? What responsibility do you have when you have that information? And I try to think about this from like a corporate standpoint, which is like completely unrelated, but like just having worked in corporate America and leadership for so long and in human resources and all of that and communications, I know things at my company that nobody else knows, right? So how transparent are we supposed to be and why? And I think, and I'm in charge of communications there. So I have to think, like, when I'm communicating something, there's a purpose, there's a reason. Right. And sometimes you have to communicate bad things. I communicate bad things all the time. And people don't like what I have to say. And people don't like me because of it. But at the end of the day, I have a job to do. So I try to think of that, too. It's like, okay, these people, I'm going to give everybody the benefit of the doubt and say who are running the country, have a job to do. And they have information that they have to make a decision about. And I, as a mere civilian, feel like it's my right to know everything. But what if I don't have all of the information? So I'm making a judgment call based on what I think they know. But like you said, once you know what's really going on, you know, now it's almost too much information. So, you know, I would love to be a fly on the wall. And some of the stories I write, shorter stories, are about being like a fly on the wall in the White House or something. And like, you see this kind of stuff happening. But I feel like we all have a responsibility once we have information. What do we do with that information? And I would hate to see anything turn us against each other, although nowadays it could be a tweet that does that, right? but I don't like to live in that kind of world. I want to live in the kind of world where we could talk about this stuff and we can be honest with each other and everybody can respect, you know, each other, right, no matter what your beliefs are. But that's right. Just not the world we live
right.
in.
Right. Well, let's take a real quick break and listen to one of our sponsors, which happens to be LA Talk Radio. Hey, it's Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything worth listening to in that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA and is a .com, so we have it all, from sports to music to self-help to, well, just about anything, including talk. And right now, it's coming right at you. Why don't you sit back and enjoy at www.latalkradio.com. And we're coming back at you. We're in the studio with Christina Rienzi and her book, Among Us. And, of course, Russ Avison is with us.
If you want to
call and talk to Christina or Russ or me or any of the three, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Let's take a little respite from the weird and the unreal and the real and the supernatural and the aliens, and let's get into, when did you start writing, Christina, and what pushed your hand towards sci-fi versus just regular fiction or I don't know, romance novels or whatever?
Yeah. So I've been writing forever, like all my life. And even as a kid, I wrote short stories that were more on the dark side, you know, which I'm sure disturbed my parents. But and when I went into psychology, they're like, okay, she's not, you know, she's got a little stuff going on in her head. So I think I, you know, like, what's going on there? Oh, she's going into psychology.
It's like your brother Reed, when you had to do a novena.
Right, exactly. It's like, okay, I watched Unsolved Mysteries as a kid. This is how this happened to me. You guys don't remember? You let me watch that stuff. And then I think about, I've always done writing, right, fiction writing, and I've always written professionally, you know, just in work. Language and writing have always been something that have intrigued me and something I'm very comfortable with, and I really like to express myself that way. So it was around 2010 where I decided I was going to take the plunge and try to write professionally a little bit more, in other words, to get published. So I began with a writing group, a local writing group, and I literally joined the writing group and just said, you know, I want to just get back into this. And I started with short stories, and, you know, writing groups can be hard. If you're new, you know, there's a lot of critiquing and harsh feedback, and, you know, that's kind of what you need, right? So I started out then about 2010, and then in 2014, I had, that was when I got my novel Choosing Evil published by a small press publisher back then, who I stayed with for a good 4 years until I recently got my rights back and indie published my two books with them. But I would say it's almost 10 years now. What about 9 years I've been like really trying to, you know, make it professionally.
Oh, and you, I mean, you've written some nice stuff. I mean, I'm looking at your list of, it looks like you've got about, what, 10, 11 novels published?
Yeah,
working
so
on the number 12?
Yeah, so I have, well, the stories themselves, there are several stories that are part of compilations and also anthologies, but in terms of physical, like, novel-length books, I have three. I have also three novellas and then a bunch of short stories out there. Mm-hmm. So probably totals around that if you add them all up.
Uh-huh. when you're writing, and I try to ask this question of everybody, because sometimes it's they just don't know, but I'm going to ask you anyway. You outline, plus you also pants from time to time.
Yeah.
And well, outlining, you know, to our new writers who are listening, outlining is, of course, setting an outline. And then pantsing is the seat of the pants writing, which means just write it as it comes. Do you find that when you're in the middle of a great scene, you got it all outlined and everything else, but your character doesn't want to go that direction? And you kind of follow where your character is going with it. And oftentimes it's like better than what you had outlined.
Yeah, always. Always is. And that, and I'm afraid, you know, that's part of what you have to do as a writer is get over yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid to trust that, but that's where the magic happens.
Right.
So when I outline, I do, I don't know if you guys, I'm sure just being in LA and probably talking to screenwriters and stuff, you've heard of Save the Cat. Mm-hmm. The Blake Snyder beat sheet. I use the Blake Snyder beat sheet for my novels. And now they have books. Jessica Brody, which is one of the Save the Cat people, has a novel writing book with this. So it's pretty much like 15 main beats of a story, and all stories, whether it's a commercial or it's a movie, have the same beats. So I use those beats, like, for example, opening image, you know, is the beginning. Final image is the end. They're opposites. They're always opposite, right? There's like a butterfly or a caterpillar or a butterfly, you know, is a story. So I use those beats and I roughly outline, very roughly, but enough to know, like, I have an idea of where it's going. I kind of know how it's going to end. Let's see where it takes me. And you have to go where it takes you. I think that's where the beauty is. When you're in the zone, you have to go where it takes you. And I call it, like, other people use this term for other things. I call it like a divine download. It's like, I'm just in the zone and all of a sudden, like, something comes to me and I have to go with it. And I might have to fix it and it might not work. But when you ignore that and when you try to stifle that, it's like your creativity, at least for me, goes out the window. And now I'm writing to a piece of paper and not the creative part. So yeah, I mean, does the creative part get messy and it doesn't always work? Sure. But things come out of it. I find that I will keep nuggets of things that come out, and I have to go down those roads. Any twists and turns in my books, I have a hard time planning those because I don't really know my characters so well till I get into the story. I'm not like a person who sketches a character out for like months and then and writes them.
Right.
I write a little bit about them and I get to know them.
Right.
So
this brings up another question. Actually, it's a very good question because you actually just gave me the question to ask you. Do you get to know your characters well enough in one novel to be able to really follow them all that well through the book, or do you put traits from other characters in with them, and how much of yourself goes into these characters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, answer the question. I can answer the last one easy. I think as an author, you're in every character.
Absolutely.
And that scares me because I write about people who kill people too. But a little bit of you is in every character. Of course, I think I know my characters well enough? No, I'll be going to be very honest with you. I don't. I figure them out along the way. And sometimes I have to go back and make them stronger. Like, that's just part of the writing process for me. I get my rough draft out and I go back and I have to really make them stronger. And what I start out with for each character is a question or like, you know, something that I want them to be answered about them by the end. Like, I want them to know about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You have a story question. I have a character question.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to have a question for all of them so that they can get to know themselves better and grow throughout the story. But yeah, I think there's, it's definitely hard to separate. I found this more difficult when I first started writing. It's hard to separate yourself from the characters. I like to have a little piece of me in there, and I know that that they are because you're writing them.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly do decide who they're going to be, and then I make sure I'm showing that through their words and their behavior throughout the story. And I try to make each character unique from the others. You know, so there are some overlapping because you have to have people who are going to be able to relate to each other in the story. You can have complete opposites so that there's a little bit, like in my story, Pierce is sort of the antagonist, at least in the beginning. And there are pieces of him, certainly, that he can relate to Marcy, the main character, and he can relate to his evil supervisor, Miles. You know, like there's a little bit of each of them. But yeah, I think it's like people. You just find out a little bit more about them the more you get to know them, and you can kind of drill down. But you never really know everything. And I like to keep a little bit for them to surprise me a little bit.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's actually a good answer.
Yes. Awesome. Yeah. How much do you listen to other people? I would assume that as you're writing, I mean, I guess some people don't reveal their book until they're completed, but I guess the first question is then, do you ever let people kind of read a rough draft of what you're working on and get their feedback? Or do you just dive in and do what you want to do?
So, no, I take feedback. I take feedback from people who I trust and know. I know they know story. I know they know what they're listening to, even if it's just from a reader perspective. Mm-hmm. I listen to editors. I listen to, anybody who I trust that knows the process and of writing a story and that, or knows story really well, or is a really big reader, like reads a lot, you know? But I listen absolutely because I'm in my own head. I don't believe even though we're the master of the story, I don't believe I'm the expert. I think I have to learn along the way too. And I want to learn along the way. And so whenever I get good feedback, it's like, yeah, that's great. Thanks. What's wrong with it? Because there's something wrong with every story and I want to fix it. Like, I'm very big on growing and developing through this process and making it better. And even when a book is published and I feel proud of it, I always say to myself, like, okay, you're going to look back on this in a year and hate it because you're going to have grown. Like, just know that you did the best you could at that moment with the writer you were that time. You know, it's okay. You're not perfect. You're never going to be perfect. You're always going to be growing. And maybe your next book will be better. And like I tell everybody, I'm chasing the author I am in 5 years. Like, I can see her, but I'm not her. I'm trying to get to her. And that's just the way I approach things in life. Like, I like to be challenged. I like to achieve. And I like to, you know, just know that I'm human. And I'm not, you know, no way, shape, or form where I want to be. But I'm putting all the work in that I can today and doing the best I can today. I don't just write a story and hit publish. I go through a process. A lot of people touch it. And I listen to them because
You are amazingly insightful and introspective.
Oh.
I'm awestruck by what you just said.
Oh, thank you. I don't know. I just, it's part of just, I think, being better at something that you feel passionate about. You know, I don't want to know the good stuff. I want to get better. And I never want to say, like, I don't think I'll ever be that kind of person that even if I was, like, you know, at the top of the New York Times bestseller list, like, I'm such an amazing writer. Like, no, there's a million writers that are better than me. I got here because I worked really hard and I got a little sprinkle of luck along the way. But always something to learn.
Okay, I need to run one more commercial and then we are done for the evening. And then we'll get into a couple more questions. So if you wouldn't mind there, Mr. Ronan, let's hear from Creative Edge.
To all of the fellow authors out there, have you ever asked yourself these questions? I've published a book. Now what do? How do I get the word out, find readers, and get reviews? How do I organize a book signing? Or who do I contact to get media attention and interviews? Well, you're not alone. And a solution can be found with Creative Edge Publicity. Creative Edge is a boutique publicity firm that focuses on helping authors increase their reach, get noticed, and build on their brands. They specialize in scheduling interviews in virtually every medium and on an international level, to organizing your author signings and promotional events, as well as helping maximize exposure for you and your books. With a diversified platform and strategy for all genres, Creative Edge works with every type of author, from the New York Times bestsellers to small press and the emerging independently published. Look for them on their website at www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge, your brand, your future.
And it's Creative Edge Publicity, of which Christina Rienzi is a member.
Yes,
and me too, actually. I think we book at least one or two a month. We have Mickey's people on the air, and they're always such great guests, and yourself included. So thank you for taking the time with us tonight.
Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, I'm reading your book, and I'm looking at your chapter count, and I have a question about your chapters. You choose to go with a shorter chapter instead of a longer one. I think the longest one you have in there is like 8 pages. The rest are between like 5 and 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is your reasoning there, if you don't mind me asking?
You know, well, it is sort of how I write. I write, you know, it's funny, like I, this is a, this happens to be a shorter book. But I do, I write short. I'm a skeletal writer and I write the, I get the guts down and I add back in, but I do love, I feel like the pace is increased a little bit when the chapters are shorter and you can, you want to flip to the next, and it just depends, the story, this is how it goes. And not every, I don't cut it off purposely, but I know how I write. And so I've gotten into the habit of trying to keep the story moving. So even if I have like a scene with that maybe, and I'm going to use word count because I'm a writer, and that's how I think. But let's say I have a scene that's 4,000 words. I might split it up into two 2,000s and put a different chapter in the middle just to keep the pace going. And that's just something I feel like when I'm reading, it keeps me turning the page. And that's, of course, what you want people to do. It just, it feels right to me in a thriller. I don't know if it's right by, you know, industry standard or whatever, but it feels right to me. And I just go with what feels right. And some are a little longer than others, but yeah, I tend to write short.
Okay. Okay.
You know, I have one comment on that too. And very specifically, this stood out to me when I started the book, and I can tell you specifically, it was between chapter four and chapter five. And you had Marcy and Lou talking about something they saw. And the end of that chapter says, they're discussing it and they say, you know, well, I don't wear glasses and what we saw was an alien spacecraft. And the next chapter picks up during that same discussion. But in my brain, it just kind of made a break that seemed, I visualized the break, like maybe the camera moved to a different part of the room to pick up the conversation. But I remembered that specifically because it was so unique in the way the flow went.
Yeah, and I can't recall if that was planned or not. And it's funny because for this book specifically, I worked with a writer coach, which was something I had never done before. Now, I'm a coach, but I'm not a writing coach. I would coach the person, right? I don't coach the writing. But this was a specific person who did not only writing but coaching. And the whole entire book, he read every single piece of it and just helped me. Like, we talked about what I wanted and what my goals were, and that's how we got to where – you know, we did with this, but I appreciate that because I think that was kind of my feeling was, of course, you want to try and end each chapter in a way that somebody wants to turn the page. But he made me think of the book cinematically, and everything that he was telling me to do, he's like, imagine you're watching it. Like, of course, it's the show don't tell for writers, you know, that are out there listening, which is can be a difficult thing to do, but it can be a very easy thing to do. And so what I would always do is when I would be going through the editing process, I would go through my book over and over again. And I would just say, like, can you see it? Like when I would read a sentence, it's like, can I see that happening? And if I can't, make it so that I can see it and make it so that it feels like the person's there. So I tried to do that with that. And certainly the way I ended chapters, you're right. I did. I may have continued on the next chapter, but I wanted it to be, I wanted there to be kind of that like separation and for you to want to continue on. So you just try different things and see what works. And it's all about style, and everyone, you know, with writing, everyone has their own style and there are rules and you have to, and I don't, you know, I believe you have to follow them. I believe you also can break them. I believe, and you have to know craft. Like I learned a lot about craft with this book and I am continuing to learn about craft, and I do put all of that stuff in. You can't do everything.
Yeah.
But certainly we have a style, you know, and a voice.
You know, I found a writing, and you know, I've been writing 9-10 years now. I think that I found writing is a lot like training horses. There are rules that you're supposed to follow, but whatever works between you and your horse is what you got to do.
True.
And
yeah.
Writing's the same thing. Whatever's working between you and the words you're putting on the page, that's what you got to go with.
Yeah. And what I got, the biggest thing I got out of my writing coach, there were two things. One is he told me writing is all about making decisions, because I would get stuck and I'm like, I don't know where to go with this. And he's like, writing is all about making decisions. Your story, you have to decide. And then you go with that.
Right.
And also it was breaking the rules, because I'm a rule follower by nature, believe it or not. So I follow all the rules, and I have my psychology background and I have all this stuff, and everything I do is very regimented in my life. I'm a left brainer. So for me to get in my right brain, it's like writing with wine or writing at 5 a.m, because that's how my right brain opens up. And he taught me to break the rules. He basically was like, follow all those rules. Here's everything you need to know. Now don't do that anymore. He's
gotcha.
Like, you know how to do that. don't ever do it again. Like, so you just, I'm with you on that.
We have just a minute or two left, and in that time, I'm going to ask you the question. The show is called The Writer's Block. Have you ever had it? And if you have, how did you get out of it?
That's funny. Yeah, I have it a lot. I probably have it right now, honestly. you know what?
No, it's radio
I'm not even
block.
Kidding. I'm like, I can't. I'm like, it's radio block. I have writer's block. No, I'm. You know what the simple answer is? You get out of it by writing.
Yep.
That's it. You really seriously just sit down and write, and I don't care if it's junk, just go. Like, that is how you get out of it.
Excellent.
That's my advice.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because we had April of in 2017, or 2017, I believe it was, we had John Sanford on our show. And he, you know, he's such a fabulous man. He's just so
amazing.
Great to talk to. But we asked him that question, and he thought for a second. He said, you know, he said, if I get stuck, I just bring in a guy with a gun.
Yeah, right? You don't have a choice now.
Which I thought was just such a perfect answer for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
You just do it. You just do something.
Christina, thank you so much. There's so many things that we'd like to keep talking with you, but unfortunately we are out of time. So we have to say goodnight, but thank you so much for joining us. And I know it's late there. And, you know, but if you have baby brain, go have your wine and then go to bed.
I agree. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Just before you go.
Thank you. This was great.
Please give us your email address and your website and where they can find you on Facebook and all that good stuff.
Sure. So it's ChristinaRienzi.com, and that's Christina with a K. And it's my email address is Christina@ChristinaRienzi.com. So pretty easy.
Excellent. Excellent. And again, thank you so much for spending the evening with us. And I hope it was okay for you, because we had a great time.
Yeah, it was fun. Lots of fun. Thank you guys so much.
Just come back and visit.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And Russ?
Yes, sir.
Go train a dog.
All right.
Your dog misses you. I'll tell Bella.
They all do.
Why?
Oh, yeah. Bella. Yeah, give Christina Bella a pat on the head for me.
Russ is he developed dog training, and my dog went to his classes. So.
Oh, I heard it was for PetSmart, and I have to tell you, my dog went, and she was the smartest dog I ever had. So thank you.
There you go.
You're welcome.
She was brilliant. Thank you so much.
That being said, and for the Writer's Block and for LA Talk Radio and for myself, Jim Christina, Russ Avison, and the ever not here Bobby Jean Bell, have a good evening, and we are out of here.